Before I start this morning, I want to share with you one of the tensions inherent in standing here before you as one of your pastors, especially in times such as these. Sometimes it feels as though I'm refereeing a wrestling match between the Bible and CNN or the New York Times or whatever media feed is the loudest. This morning, like last Sunday, we come to this sanctuary and we drop into the pews like leaden weights, some of us. We are weighed down by the events of yet another violent week. I really don't want to have our worship always be about horrific tragedies, mass murders, and the latest news. I don't want to look on my computer to find out what I should preach about. What we are called to on Sunday and every day is to view our world, the world, through the lens of our faith. We are called to try and make sense of our lives in light of our understanding of God, the scriptures and teachings, and the life and witness of Jesus Christ. This is what grounds us, sets us straight, and makes us feel aligned with the truth. Jesus Christ is our plumb line. And if you feel crooked or feel that you are off balance or that you are tilting this way or that, drop a line to Jesus and rest against that blissfully straight anchor. When we listen to passages from the Old Testament, we should always remember that we are learning the same stories and teachings that formed Jesus. Jesus was Jewish, and his understanding of God was formed by the prophetic witness of men like Amos. A little historical background, I think, might help you in knowing what's really going on in the passage that Dave just read. At the time, the kingdom was divided into two parts, the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. Amos was from Judah, and he was, as he himself explained, a herdsman and a dresser of sycamore trees. And though this is really not relevant to our topic at hand, I have to admit that I get distracted by comments like that. A dresser of sycamore trees? Sycamore trees are beautiful. They don't need clothing and adornment. What is going on here? What in the heaven's name is a dresser of sycamore trees? Well, have you ever seen that gorgeous sycamore tree on Falls Road in Shelburne? That huge, gorgeous, glorious tree? It is beautiful. But in the Middle East, the sycamore trees are a different variety, and they're not nearly as resplendent. And they have little hard fruits on them that are in casings, and they don't ripen very well. They ripen far more quickly if you pierce them with a sharp object. That is what a dresser of sycamore trees does. Goes around piercing the little hard fruit so that they will ripen. The fruit isn't itself highly prized, and the dressing of these trees is a pretty menial job. So Amos makes note of this to show that he is not some high-minded dignitary, but a lowly herdsman and a field hand. He wasn't looking for God, but God was clearly looking for him. What God does is to send him out of his southern country of Judah into a foreign land, the north of Israel. You know how much natives appreciate foreigners coming in and telling them that everything they're doing is wrong. Which is pretty much Amos's message. Amos was essentially sent into exile, away from his family, his homeland, and everything that was familiar. Have you ever been in exile? Have you ever felt exiled? This may seem like an odd question addressed to such a privileged lot as we who live in our homeland, most of us with homes of our own. We have chosen to be where we are. But there are different kinds of exile, The first is geographic exile, when you are clearly, for whatever reason, not in the physical space that you want to be, when you are not at home, when you're in a foreign country or even an unfamiliar landscape or topographical region, you can feel displaced. I have a theory, completely unsupported by any scientific data whatsoever, to my knowledge, that the kind of landscape in which we feel at home is woven into our DNA. You can live all your life in a particular landscape and not feel that you are where you should be. When I go out west and look at the Rocky Mountains and their steep, dramatic, piercing cliffs and the western hues of gold and brown, I say, wow, great job, God. Please get me home to the rolling, green, lush landscape, to rain and humidity and clouds. Is this my English heritage? We can live somewhere all our lives and feel out of sorts and visit someplace we have never been before and go, aha, I am home. To be in exile is to feel yourself out of place. It's not so much that you are alien to the land, the people, the country, or the region, as it is that they are all unfamiliar to you. When you are a political refugee, you accept this because the alternative is unbearable, because your home is occupied by the enemy. But there's another kind of exile, and that's spiritual exile. I suspect that this is familiar to most of you in some way or another, whether or not you've articulated it. When you are in spiritual exile, you find yourself out of sync with those around you. It can happen gradually and can be intricately related to your own growth and evolution. Within all systems, there are some unspoken rules, ways of being that keep a system running, no matter how functional or dysfunctional those rules and way of being are. Certain behaviors are permissible and others are not, and different people fill specific roles in the perpetuation of this system. Pardon this little mini introduction to systems theory, but it is really relevant here. The system to which you belong can be an organization, or a government, or a family, or a marriage, or a church. If someone within the system changes or grows or decides to start talking about something that has hitherto been forbidden, either verbally by or unspoken fiat, the marriage or family or organization or church or country can get upset and feel threatened. Your health can be threatening to the organization. Have you ever seen this happen? If you are the one who is changing, daring to voice your reality and speak the truth as you see it, you may find yourself with a bullseye painted on your back. Sometimes slowly and sometimes suddenly, you can feel as though you don't belong, as if you are no longer at home. Amos, God love him, experienced both geographic and spiritual exile, and everyone in the northern kingdom, from the king to the high priest, wanted to shut him up and send him back where he belonged. Oh, seer, go. Flee to the land of Judah. Earn your bread there and prophesy there, but never again prophesy at Bethel, for it is the king's sanctuary and it is the temple of the kingdom. Whatever you have done, don't you dare come spreading disruption into the temple of the kingdom. In other words, this is our church, and we don't want any foreigners disrupting the way we do things. We are doing things the way we have always done them, and certainly don't need an upstart from the south or far away telling us that we need to change. Is this beginning to sound just a little bit familiar? Might this actually not only be about ancient Israel and the wandering prophet? This church is in a time of transition, and though we soldier on and hope ultimately that all will be well, our system, the normal routine of what we do and why, is being questioned. When Will left a year ago, many of us rolled up our sleeves and vowed to carry on as we had, as best we could. And I think we did a very good job. The wheel of the system kept turning. I think I said at one point that I thought my job then was just to hold the tiller. But when Arnold came, some of us, with great sigh of relief, handed the tiller over to him. I, for one, was thrilled to relinquish the helm. A search committee was formed, and again, once they were commissioned, some of us thought, great, now they can find us a settled pastor. But before you knew it, they were roping us back into the process with surveys and home meetings that prodded us to think and reflect and pray and wonder. What was being asked was nothing less than we discern our own truths, that we figure out our plumb line and assess how this organization, this family, this church is aligning with that anchor. We were asked to dream about what could be and what we longed for, and honestly assess the strengths and the challenges of this church. It wasn't easy, but it was a really good thing, because all of this stopping and reflecting is about honesty and the truth. Healthy spirituality is always honest. Always. Honest as the plumb line of healthy spirituality. The home meetings and surveys that were conducted subtly threatened to shake up our system as they acknowledged and encouraged us to give voice to our inner yearnings and hopes and questions about this church. This is a time of growth, and some of you, as you dare to speak your truths, may feel that you are suddenly in a foreign land, that the church that has been your home feels a little strange and different. This is part of the process of growth for us as individuals and as a worshiping and witnessing community. Uncomfortable things may be brought to light. Some may feel out of place. Others may feel like fleeing. It can feel like a kind of spiritual exile, even if you've been in these buildings for decades. We are wired as humans with a strong fight or flight response. They are survival tactics. What we are being called to now, as this family of ours goes through a changing time, is to speak the truth and stay connected, eyes to eyes. Don't apologize for voicing your reactions to things. Know that God is with us always, always, when we speak the truth in love. As we consider as a church what role we might have in aiding the refugees here in Vermont, it's important for us to understand what it feels like to be in exile, to understand it in our hearts and in our souls. It is also essential that we understand why we might embark on this initiative as a congregation. What whistle from God are we inclining towards? To love our neighbors as ourselves, to comfort the lost, to welcome the refugee. The Bible in both the Old and New Testament is rife with this commandment. There are times when religion and politics can be separate, though I must admit that increasingly I am finding them few and far between. But the question of welcoming refugees is, I suppose, a political stance I take from the perspective of a religious imperative. It's my hope that you will join with those among us who have already initiated this ministry. Some of you were here last month when Lori Stavrand from the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program came to worship and introduced us to Patricia, Democratic Republic of the Congo. After worship, we met with Patricia and Lori to get to know her and to hear her dreams. This relationship has grown in the ensuing weeks, and I want to share what's been going on. Patricia told you about having to leave the DRC and going to Kenya as a refugee, where she lived for 4 years before finally coming to the United States. What she didn't tell you is what made it imperative that she leave the DRC. When she was about 17, she was attacked, beaten, and left for dead in a ditch by the side of the road. A woman happened to be passing by, saw her, and saved her. She did not know the woman and never saw her again. She was a complete stranger, a good Samaritan to be sure. Fast forward 5 or 6 years, and Patricia is here in Vermont working for UVM as a house cleaner. She met a man at the Congolese church that they both attend in Burlington, and they fell in love, and they want to get married, but they don't know where or how this might happen. And so I told Patricia that she was welcome to get married here and to have the reception in the vestry. This seems simple enough, but I have learned in the past month that even though you speak the same language, it can be very difficult to understand what someone is saying. I have learned so much from Patricia about her culture and about listening and not projecting my expectations and views on her. It turns out that in her culture, there are traditionally 3 weddings and a party. The first is a family transfer of money. Since Patricia has no family in this country, she and her husband will send the money to her uncle in Canada. A lot of money, $4,000. The suggestion that perhaps in an effort to save money, that this could be sent in increments, was met with horror from Patricia. No, 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 she said. Then we would not be married. We would be cursed forever. So much for that idea. The second wedding, the official one, will happen in our vestry following very specific guidelines. There will be a table with the American flag behind the table. There will be a photograph of the president on the table. This wedding better happen before January. Not many people will attend, perhaps 50. We will have cake and some beverages and the official ceremony, which I will perform. The third wedding will be a service of blessing at their Congolese church. Just lots of blessings. There, where the reception would be held was a hard one to wrestle down. Charlotte is too far for the Congolese in Burlington to travel, and transportation is an issue since it is in their culture very important that they be able to come and go. The Congolese really party at night. We searched high and low for nice, inexpensive venues, and just when we were all getting very discouraged, the president of the Burlington International Airport, Glenn, offered the airport for free. We still have hurdles to jump in helping Patricia start a new life. She and her fiance need an apartment, and they need to secure financing for that, and they need to furnish it with more than the secondhand mattress, which is their sole possession. Planning a wedding or weddings may seem frivolous, but I am so honored to join with members of this congregation and the children and to be part of this hopeful time for this young woman. Quite honestly, it amazes me that she ever wanted to look at a man again, let alone fall in love. She is planning on going to nursing school and someday maybe going into fashion design. If you saw her, you know she has an eye for it. Patricia's faith is very strong, and she believes that so long as she stays focused on Jesus, all will be well. May we learn from this refugee and be so strong and so plumb. Amen.